Welcome to the Gregory Neesmith Show. Let's get personal about the news and the culture. Shout out to the underdogs, to my people, and even the occasional Trump supporter that might have accidentally found this show. Appreciate you all. If you enjoy a special mix of politics, culture, and personal development, you've made it to the right place. As we get into some underdog stuff. You know, the uns. The unbelievable. The underrated. The unjust. The unsaid. The uninhibited. The unconventional. You get it by now. Underdog stuff. And to take you on that journey, every Sunday live and during the week on a podcast, to take you on that journey is your host, Gregory Neesmith. Entrepreneur. Content creator. Leadership coach, a bunch of other stuff. But when it's all said and done, I like to just say what I'm into is spreading special stuff. And one of the things I'm grateful to do every week is spread that special stuff with you live on the airwaves of WHER 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem, the home of the Gregory Neesmith Show. And a disclaimer, just in case, if this is your first time tuning in, hopefully it's not, but if it is, enjoy the ride for the next 2 hours. What we do here is, this ain't CNN. This ain't Fox News. This ain't the New York Times. This ain't the Wall Street Journal. And then, hey, not that there's anything wrong with those things, you know. They cover the news. They commentate about it. But here on the Gregory Neesmith Show, we do that, plus we get personal about it. Today, what are we going to talk about today? What do you want to talk about today? I have a lot of things on my mind today. And in the spirit of sometimes you just got to let it flow. And normally I have three distinct buckets of things I want to get to each show. But today, I'm going to be kind to myself. Had a long week. Was in Las Vegas for a conference. Had a good time. Learned a lot. Met a lot of good people. But it kind of threw off my rhythm for the week and how I get ready for the show. So this week, we're going to do something a little different. Today's theme is unscripted. And we'll kind of go where the energy takes us. I got a couple things I want to get to, like unavoidable news stories of the week and some underdog stuff. But we'll make it happen together. And I always enjoy when you go on the ride with me. So where would I like to start? I think I'm going to start here with a quick story. And I know a lot of you underdogs and my people can relate to this. You ever been to a loved one's funeral? And it's always a challenging occasion, right? When you lose a loved one. And at the funeral, you know there's going to be the viewing of the body. You know it's going to be emotional, a lot of tears. You know you're going to get to see a lot of family and friends. Maybe some family and friends you haven't seen for years. You know they often say weddings and funerals bring us back together. And of course it's unfortunate because we should look to interact with one another more than just those occasions. But those are the occasions that oftentimes bring us back together. And so funerals also are a time to see a lot of family and friends maybe you haven't seen in a while. And it's a very emotional and serious occasion. And at the same time, like most things that involve people, there's some uncertainty at the funeral. There's a little bit of anxiety, a little angst. When you know that on the program, people are going to get to get up and talk. And we wouldn't be keeping it real if we didn't admit that there's always some anxiety, right? Is the pastor going to make sure he honors our loved one, or is he going to start preaching? Is the neighbor that gets up to talk going to stay focused on why we're celebrating the loss of our loved one, or are they going to go left? Is Auntie Nay going to be able to contain herself and stay on message? And then you got some people, you know, going to get up to speak because it's almost required, right? They're supposed to say something. But you know darn well your loved one didn't like them. And those people up there speaking didn't like your loved one. But for whatever reason, we have certain rituals and things that we do. And you kind of sit there and you bite your tongue and you just hope that it goes faster than it does. That Auntie Nay and your next door neighbor, just hurry up. Because we all know your loved one didn't really like them that much anyway. And that's kind of how I felt this week when I heard this.
50 years ago, Dr. King was cruelly taken from this world by an assassin's bullet. But the promise he fought for could never be taken away. His words, his deeds, they live on forever. And the cause for which he gave his life only gained strength and force and power with the passage of time. On this cherished day, we honor the memory of Reverend King, and we rededicate ourselves to a glorious future where every American from every walk of life can live free from fear, liberated from hatred, and uplifted by boundless love for their fellow citizens. I ask every citizen to join me in remembering this great American hero and to carry on his legacy of justice, equality, and freedom. God bless the memory of Reverend King, and God bless the United States of America.
Remember when I just said that sometimes you're at the funeral of a loved one and someone in your circle is kind of required to talk, but you kind of wish they didn't get up and say anything? That's kind of how I just felt just now. And also, shout out to the underdogs coming along on the journey today. Shout out to Lynn, Big Dog, one of my good friends from Uptown, a.k.a. Mount Airy, a.k.a. Philadelphia, checking in online. And I'm talking about how sometimes you can be at the funeral of a loved one and just unsettled that certain people get to get up and talk and you're like, my loved one didn't really care for you that much. And if they did know you, I definitely know they wouldn't care for you that much. And that's kind of how I felt when Donald Trump was talking about Dr. Martin Luther King, because as most of you know, we acknowledge the fact that it's been 50 years since his assassination. And maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the only one who was rubbed the wrong way by listening to Donald Trump attempt to acknowledge the great work of Dr. King. When at times I feel like Donald Trump is, in the end, actually going against some of the things that Dr. Martin Luther King stood for. But I know that I wasn't the only one. Turns out that a lot of folks were kind of rubbed the wrong way that Donald Trump was out here putting MLK's name in his mouth.
I think what people really don't understand, for those of us that grew up in the King movement and the generation after King, is that we mark the 50th anniversary with the challenges that we have a president that has made this kind of racial divide and intolerance become vogue again. Because when you look at what Donald Trump is doing around pet questions of people of color, Mexicans, blacks, Muslims, he has reintroduced what Dr. King's life was again.
He's taken us back.
Taken us really back.
50 years or further. I mean, certainly this sort of talk coming from a president, you'd have to go back. God, I don't know how far you would have to go back to hear the sort of talk from a president that we're hearing now, unfortunately, from this deplorable example of one.
Maybe it's just me. Am I the only one who's been to the funerals of some loved ones? And while there, being emotional, shedding tears, attempting to remember and celebrate the person that just passed, and at the same time having anxiety about some of the people who are going to get up and speak and know that my loved one wasn't really down with them. knowing that, as Lenny said, there's going to be people there in the audience that are coming out there expecting something with their hands out. People cozying up to my loved one as if they were down with them. That's kind of how I felt this week. When Donald Trump, someone who has once said that there are good people on both sides of those who want equality and those who don't. A man who's on record of saying that America was great in the 1950s and that we should make it great again. But it wasn't so great for everybody in the 1950s last time I checked. But I'm not going to leave it there. Unfortunately, when we're at the funeral of a loved one, sometimes we just have to sit there and suck it up and take the fact that there's some people on stage that probably shouldn't be there, that should keep our loved one's name out their mouth. But I wouldn't end this first discussion with just Donald Trump. And nothing against Al Sharpton, but I don't even want to end it with Al when talking about this great American loved one for all of us named Dr. Martin Luther King. I'd rather us hear from him.
What is it about the Negro? I mean, every other group that came as an immigrant somehow, not easily, but somehow got around it. Is it just the fact that Negroes are black?
White America must see that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. That is one thing that other immigrant groups haven't had to face. The other thing is that the color became a stigma. American society made the Negro's color a stigma. America freed the slaves in 1863 through the Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, but gave the slaves no land or nothing in reality, and as a matter of fact, to get started on. At the same time, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that there was a willingness to give the white peasants from Europe an economic base. And yet it refused to give its black peasants from Africa, who came here involuntarily in chains and had worked free for 244 years, any kind of economic base. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without food to eat or land to cultivate, and therefore it was freedom and famine at the same time. And when white Americans tell the Negro to lift himself by his own bootstraps, they don't look over the legacy of slavery and segregation. I believe we ought to do all we can and seek to lift ourselves by our own bootstraps. But it's a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And many Negroes, by the thousands and millions, have been left bootless as a result of all of these years of oppression and as a result of a society that deliberately made his color a stigma and something worthless and degrading.
Whew. We could just sit on that for the next 2 hours. And as Lenny said, one of my good friends from Philadelphia says, I'm sure number 45 was sick to his stomach when he had to read the script in those words about Dr. Martin Luther King. And I agree with you, Lynn. And I'm sure if Dr. Martin Luther King was here too, he'd be sick to his stomach having to listen to Donald Trump say those words. But like I said, I didn't want to end it on Trump and Al Sharpton talking about MLK. I wanted to play some clips of MLK himself. And that one caught my attention because he mentions a couple things that I just want to, sometimes I think we lose perspective. Let's say somebody is overweight. 300, 400 pounds. If someone loses 100, 150 pounds, that's great, right? If you're 400 pounds, you lose 200 pounds, or 100 pounds, you go down to 300. And that's great that you made progress, but you still have a ways to go to be healthy, to be right. And so I get it. I'm not a slave anymore. I get it. Jim Crow isn't around anymore. But just because we've lost some weight doesn't mean that we've reached a healthy place yet. And a couple of phrases from what Dr. Martin Luther King just said caught my attention. We got freedom, but we got famine at the same time. That's a hard base to start from. Folks want us to pick ourselves up, lace up our bootstraps, but we don't have any boots. And so, while progress has been made, you know why we still get to fight? Because the words on those papers, like the Declaration of Independence, the words in the Constitution, they're good words. All men and women are created equal. We get to pursue happiness. But that still ain't available to everybody. And not everybody has boots to even lace up. And so we will continue to fight. And you know what we do here, underdogs. We will continue to fight to rediscover how special we are in the world. And we will continue to protest. And instead of me saying it, I'll let him say it.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest for right.
And I do want to take a moment to obviously acknowledge Dr. Martin Luther King, especially as we remember that 50 years ago to this month, he was assassinated. And I also just want to remind underdogs out there, especially the ones who are the protesters, the freedom fighters, the activists. Martin Luther King was despised and hated by almost 2/3 of Americans back in the 60s. And obviously, look at everybody now celebrating him 50 years later. And so I just want to give a special shout out to all the activists, the freedom fighters and protesters of today who are seen as getting in the way, who are seen as ungrateful, who are seen as not doing it right, who are seen as maybe write a letter to your congressman instead. I want to acknowledge you now because I know history will look back on you as doing the right thing, but I don't want to wait that long. So thank you for the fight that you put on today, even in the face of being disliked right now. With that, I'm going to take a quick break. And then we come back more of today's episode, Unscripted, where we just kind of go where the energy goes today. Shout out to all the folks following along on the Facebook Live, to my man Big Dog Lynn from Mount Airy, Uptown, Philly in the building. And to all the folks listening on the airwaves of WHCR 90.3 FM, appreciate you. More of the Gregory Neesmith Show. Let's get personal about the news and the culture after this break.
These truths are be self-evident. Our men and women are created equal, including black Americans.
That song you just heard playing was that of Common and Black Thought. I was grateful enough to be in the building at the Apollo in Harlem to watch Between the World and Me, which was a theatrical reading of Mr. Coates' book. And folks like Common, Angela Bassett, Joe Morton, and Black Thought were there reading from the book, but they took a little time out and Black Thought and Common did a song. And that was what I just played a few minutes ago. Shout out to Naveen for making it happen and making sure I was up in the building. I appreciate you, Naveen. And not just for the show, but for everything. And so shout out to Naveen, shout out to Black Thought, shout out to Common, and shout out to Between the World and Me. If it comes to a city near you, you should go see it. It's worth it. With that, now I'm going to take a break and play a little music. More of the Gregory Neesmith Show. Let's get personal about the news and the culture after this. And when we come back, there's a bunch of stuff still on my mind to talk about. We're just going to cruise around some of the unavoidable news of the week. There's some students protesting at Howard University. Hillary Clinton is back on the scene again. She's back. Donald Trump still can't figure out what to do with a porn star. We'll cover it. We'll commentate about it, but we'll also get personal about it. And I still want to talk about things I've learned as a kid that I forgot that I should probably learn again, because there's some things that we did as kids that can help us as adults. Back in the days when I was young, I'm not a kid anymore, but some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. And it looks like we may have a caller. So I'm going to take this call before we go to break. And then when we come back, more of the Gregory Neesmith Show. Caller, name and where you calling from.
Randy Jones, the Bronx. What's going on?
Hey, nothing much, man. What's up with you?
What's going on? What y'all was talking about?
We were just talking about that Donald Trump was probably should have kept MLK's name out of his mouth. He was given an acknowledgement of Dr. Martin Luther King and the fact that he was assassinated 50 years ago. And we were just talking about the fact that you ever been to a funeral of a loved one and there's a couple people who get up and talk and you're like, my loved one didn't really feel you that way. Didn't he really like you? I don't even think you should be talking right now. But because of the way things are done in families and, you know, people get up and talk, but you kind of wish they didn't. And I kind of wish Donald Trump wouldn't have got up and talked about Martin Luther King. Didn't feel genuine to me.
Okay, well, hey, listen, he acknowledged. Dr. King did a lot. I mean, as long as he ain't told nothing negative or bad about Dr. King, I mean, it's good to talk. And even your enemy, whenever, you know, God used you in such a great way, even your enemies got to acknowledge and bow down and realize that you was a person. You know, you did your thing, okay? And the interview that you said earlier, you saying something scripture about a child. The scripture is, when I was a child, I thought I was a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. That's similar to what you were saying earlier. I heard you before you got me on the air.
Yep. Yes. And I want to talk about that. There are some things that, what's the saying that comes to mind? There's this idea that everybody we meet, you can be a student and a teacher. And so I just don't want us to lose sight that even kids, they can learn from us as adults, but also they can teach us stuff too.
Yeah, well, before you become a teacher, you got to learn to be a good student. First of all, a teacher is a leader. So before you become a leader, a good leader, you got to be a good follower. Okay?
That's fair.
If you go biblical time, like you just started saying, the words, the disciples were good followers. Jesus is the leader. And after he had left, he died, then they became the leaders. So then now we talk about them.
Hey,
you know?
Look, hey, it's Sunday. We're in Harlem, and we dropping some scripture. It only feels right. Hey,
exactly. I was just on a talk show yesterday. Okay, that's supposed to be airing the first Wednesday of next month. It keeps me on the Yvonne show. Okay, and we was talking scripture stuff as well. Similar to what we talking about now.
Hey.
Okay, I don't try to condone nobody. I don't try to like push no one. I mean, I do, but not in a way that's going to be religiosity. I just be using God to say whatever God gives me to say.
Hey,
okay? Dr. King was a preacher, and he did what he did. And because of what he did, you know, we have legal rights for interracial marriage. We have legal rights to drink out of any water fountain we want and not just say whites only. We have legal rights to do some things. Now, Mr. Trump, President Trump, you know, he wants to make America great again. And that's almost similar to, like, what people would say when we went back in the 60s as polls being segregated. Okay, it's not so much making America great again. Okay? Because when America hasn't been great, okay, it's always been a great place. Because it wasn't a great place, foreigners wouldn't be trying to best to move from their country, but they get slaughtered to come here.
Yep, no, and I appreciate that perspective, and I will comment on that in a second. But as always, man, I appreciate you calling in and dropping some biblical terms and also just sharing your thoughts on what's going on in the world. Always appreciate it.
Exactly. I try to call back, okay? I got something I got to take care of, but I'll try to call back and just encourage, okay?
All right, man, appreciate you. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Right out. And that was Randy talking about the fact that in his belief that, you know, America's always been great. And I think, and he says, look at the fact that, like, everybody wants to come here. And that's true. There's a lot of folks who've come here for the promise and the dreams that America has, for capitalism, for certain rights to vote, to not be in a totalitarian government or country. They've come here because there's hope here. And at the same time, I always like to say that it's not about making America great again, for me, it's the journey of continuing to make America be as good as it can be. For it to live up to the words on the paper. I'm not trying to make America great again. I want it to be as great as it can be. The journey continues. And I'm glad that we have folks like Dr. Martin Luther King out here fighting for America to live up to the words that it put on paper hundreds of years ago. With that, Randy makes a good point. You know, I'm a bit bitter. I wanted Trump to keep MLK's name out of his mouth because I feel like Trump is at odds with some of the things that Martin Luther King was fighting for. But I get it. Just like at our loved one's funeral, there's some people who get up to talk that you feel like your loved one wasn't really that close to them, wasn't really feeling them that much, but they still get to get up and say something. And Trump's the president. He gets to get up and say something and acknowledge Dr. Martin Luther King, even though at times I feel like he lives at odds with everything that Martin Luther King was about. But I kind of wish he would keep his name out of his mouth. And in other Trump news, there's another name he should probably keep out his mouth.
Did you know about the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels? Then why did Michael Cohen make it if there was no truth or allegation?
Well, you have to ask Michael Cohen. Michael's my attorney, and you'll have to ask Michael.
And do you know where he got the money to make that payment?
No, I don't know.
Did you ever set up a fund of money that you could pay for?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear your response earlier about Scott Pruitt.
That was Donald Trump. Should have kept MLK out of his mouth this week and probably should have kept Stormy Daniels' name out of his mouth this week. Shout out to Danny, who's following along on the Facebook Live, who says there was a time Trump knew what to do with Stormy. That may be true, Danny, but this is no longer the time and he no longer, I think, knows what to do. And for those who've been following, I'm not going to stay on this story too long, but I just wanted to mention again that Trump's out here talking when he should probably just keep his mouth shut. And now saying that he knows nothing about Stormy, about payments and hush money, nothing. But you know how they say sometimes if you know you're in trouble or you've done something, just to like stay quiet. Don't say nothing. Plead the fifth. No comment. But self-control seems to be something that is elusive for Mr. Trump. And so him making those comments earlier this week likely could get him in some trouble. Supposedly. Maybe. Kinda. Did somebody say impeachment? I don't know. Eh. Are we there yet? Probably not. But.
We think this is basically game over as it relates to our claim. We've heard, Lawrence, for the better part of a month now that this was a rock-solid, airtight agreement. You've got David Schwartz out there talking about what an excellent lawyer Michael Cohen is and how this was a model. This was a model NDA. It's a lot of things, but there is no way in hell it's a model NDA. This thing is a piece of trash in reality, and everybody knows it, and any legal analyst that looks at it will tell you the same thing, who's not biased. But that's what we've been hearing. And now what we have is we have a principal party to the agreement who admits on camera that supposedly he didn't know anything about a principal term of the agreement. Well, that means he didn't know anything about the agreement, which means there is no agreement. So all of this chest pounding and these threats about how they were going to bury my client and they were going to seek $20 million and they were going to go on an extended vacation with the money and all of this other buffoonery that we've heard for the last few weeks, that all goes out the window.
Well, we'll see. I'm not really much into the sex lives of people. You know, that's their business. But obviously, the part of this that becomes my business and your business is whether or not there were any laws broken. Campaign finance laws, things like that. And so we'll continue to monitor the situation just in case Trump's sex life turns into some legal troubles, which could then impact who's the president of the United States going forward. With that, we're coming up on the end of the first hour. Goes by so quickly. Already we've talked about Trump maybe keeping some names out his mouth. Should keep MLK out his mouth. For legal reasons, he should probably keep Stormy Daniels' name out his mouth. Still to come, let's get into some unjust and just right. When Randy called up, he talked about the fact that one of the things that Martin Luther King fought for was voting rights. And it's a big deal, right, to have the right to vote. But there was a recent study that suggested some folks might be willing to give up their right to vote for something. That literally, if given the choice between the right to vote or something, and I'll tell you what this something is after the break, that at least a third of Americans were like, yo, forget this right to vote stuff. I'd rather have this thing as opposed to voting. Voting's good and all, but I'd rather have this. And I'll tell you what this is after the break. And you let me know, is it unjust or just right? What would you be willing to give up? Or said a different way, what could someone offer you that you'd be like, all right, cool, I'll give up my right to vote for the rest of my life if I could have X? Is that even an option for you? Is it even a question that I should ask? You're like, Gregory, stop it. I'm not giving up my right to vote for nothing. Or is it true that everyone and everything has its price? A lot of people out here over the years have fought for people to have the right to vote. I mean, think about it. We're only 100 years removed from white women being able to vote in the 1920s. And then only 50 years removed from black folks and everyone else being able to vote in the United States. So we're only 50 years removed from all Americans having the right to vote. And yet there was a recent study that said a third of Americans be like, y'all, this voting thing is cool and all, but I'd rather have this thing instead. And I'll tell you what this thing is after this quick the music break, and we'll get into it. You let me know, unjust or just right, what would you be willing to give up, or what would you want in exchange for giving up your right to vote? You may think it's a crazy question, but some Americans answered it, and a third of them were willing to give up their right to vote for this thing, and we'll discuss it after this break. More of the Gregory Neesmith Show. Let's get personal. You get personal. Share. Let me know. What would you give up? What would you want to no longer vote in America for the rest of your life? A third of Americans said they know what their price is. Let me know what yours is. More of the Gregory Neesmith Show after this break. Welcome back to the Gregory Neesmith Show. You've made it to the right place if, and that's only if, you enjoy a special mix of politics, culture, and personal development. Put all up into a blender, mixed up, and spits out a special delivery of underdog stuff. Shout out to the underdogs and to my people, and even the occasional Trump supporter that might have accidentally found the show. One disclaimer, though. This ain't CNN. This ain't Hot 97. This ain't MSNBC. This ain't the Wall Street Journal. This ain't the New York Times. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But they cover the news. They commentate about it. But here at the Gregory Neesmith Show, we get personal about it. So let's do it. Let's get personal about the news and the culture. It's the second hour already. Time be flying by. And I teased before the break that we were going to talk about voting. Right? You know, 50 years removed from the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. The great man that he was.
America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they have committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
Woo, I miss him. And one of the things Dr. Martin Luther King fought for were voting rights. You know, I think we often forget that we're not that far removed from only 100 years ago or so were white women permitted to vote in federal elections. We're only 50 years removed from black folks and the rest of Americans being able to vote in federal elections and local ones and state ones. Supposedly, one of the foundational pieces of what makes America, America, is democracy. And not having rulers or kings and queens, being able to be a government that is aspires to be for the people, of the people, by the people. And so voting is one of the foundational pieces of what makes America, America. And just because we have the right to vote doesn't mean we always get it right. About 60 million folks voted for Donald Trump. In my humble opinion, I feel like they didn't get it right. But that's how it's set up here. You get to go out and make your case and then vote and see what happens. And you got people out here who've formerly been incarcerated and depending on what state they're in, have lost their right to vote and are petitioning and fighting to get it back because they know part of being a citizen is the ability to move about and the freedom to go where you want to go, to do what you want to do, and also to be able to participate in one of the foundational pieces of this country is voting. And so I was a bit taken aback. And it gets me to my question of whether you think this is unjust or just right. But there was a recent survey done by LendEDU. They polled over 1,200 working Americans and asked them, would they give up their right to vote for an immediate 10% annual pay raise? What do you think? What percent of Americans, your fellow Americans, your brothers and sisters, what percent of Americans do you think said this voting stuff is good and all, it's cool, but I'll give up voting for the rest of my life if I can get an immediate annual 10% pay raise? And just to put that in perspective, and I'm going to take a little time here because I want you to guess. If you're watching on the Facebook Live at facebook.com/GregoryNiesman, write in a percentage. What percent of Americans do you think would give up their right to vote for the rest of their life for a 10% pay raise? And just to put this in perspective, I believe the average income, and I'm not sure whether this is household or individual, but bear with me, it's around $50,000+ a year. So let's just use that the average income per year is around 50, just to make a round number. Let's say it's 50,000. I believe it's slightly above 50. And that means 10% of $50,000 is $5,000. So what percent of Americans do you think on average would take $5,000 more a year in exchange for never voting again for the rest of their life? According to a poll by LendEDU, polling 1,238 American workers, and that sample size being leveraged to infer what most Americans would do. Any guesses on what percent of people said they're like, this voting thing is cool and all, but I'm out. Give me my 10%. Give me my raise. 35%. 35% of people said they would give up their voting rights for life for a 10% pay raise. Heck, 9% of people said in the same poll they would give up their children's right to vote for life for the raise. 12% said they would break up with their partners. 19% said they would give up their health care insurance for the next 5 years. 55% said they would even work an extra 10 hours a week just for a 10% pay raise in exchange for giving up the right to vote for the rest of their life. Surprised? Well, I know some of you might not be surprised, but some of you might be the people who answered that you would do it. What would you do for a 10% pay raise? Would you give up your right to vote, underdogs? I at first, when I saw this, I was like, this is ludicrous. Crazy. How could they do that? Do they not know all we went through to get the right to vote? America's built on this foundation and this and that. And then I remembered that, first of all, we barely turn out for presidential elections. And then let's not even talk about the midterm elections where we're voting for state and local representation. We barely show up to those. Just as one data point as an example, I'm from Philadelphia. I used to do a radio show down in Philly every week back in 2015, 2016. And I think it was reported that for the last election for the mayor of Philadelphia, only 27% of eligible voters came out to vote. Yeah, I said that. It wasn't a typo or I didn't misspeak. I didn't get my number wrong. 27%. Only one in four people who were eligible to vote in one of the largest cities in America, only one in four of those eligible voters came out to the polls to vote for the most important job in the city of Philadelphia, the mayor. 27%. So then I started to think, man, there's people who want to give up the right to vote for life for a 10% pay raise. And I'm like, well, guess what? A lot of people are giving up their right to vote right now for nothing. Those 73% that didn't show up just didn't show up. And I get it. It can feel frustrating, like you're never getting heard. These politicians aren't representing your underdog interests. But the less involved we are, the even easier it'll be to be ignored. And so at first I'm like, I can't believe 35% of Americans would give up the right to vote for life. But then I realize a lot of us have given up the right to vote already for nothing. And the survey goes on to say, in defense of those surveyed, a significant annual raise is hard to come by these days, right? Wages have stagnated over the past couple years. And sure, there were some tax cuts by the Trump administration, but most of those go to folks who have LLCs and are incorporated, or to those who are very, very well off. And so I understand. Folks are like, I barely go to the polls anyway, so of course I'll take the money. Of course I'll take that $5,000 a year off my $50,000 average annual salary that Americans make and never vote again. But I would like to offer this. There's other options out there. Now, for underdogs, listen, especially if you are a minority or a woman, there's been countless studies that show that you, or in my case, a black man, don't always negotiate our work situations. That sometimes we're just grateful just to have a job. We ain't trying to cause no problems. We just want to keep that check coming in that we get. But that's not enough. It's okay to get into the habit of making a request for additional vacation days or more pay. Something. Get in the habit of making a request. Get in the habit of negotiating. Because as the saying goes, people ain't out here getting what they deserve. There's a lot of people out here getting what they negotiate. And I'd rather us as underdogs keep our rights as opposed to feeling like we have to get paid to lose them. And if I get all next level, which, you know, I do from time to time, I hope that we aren't out here giving up our money for our rights, giving up our safety for our rights, giving up our loved ones, giving up our dreams just for some money. There's other ways to get that money that shouldn't have to have us sacrificing our rights to vote, our rights to safety, our right to our dreams, our right to our freedom, the right to our loved ones. But I get it. 50% of Americans can't even come up with $2,000 in cash in 30 days. So I understand why. And it's sad that a pay raise is so hard to come by that folks will be willing to give up their right to vote for life. Let me know What would you be willing to give up? Or what would you want in exchange for giving up your right to vote? Maybe you're like, that question is a non-starter for you. But guess what? For 35% of Americans, hardworking ones, they're like, yo, give me that raise. Forget this voting thing. Let's go to the phone lines. Name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, James from Harlem. How you doing?
James, this is your topic, man. This is voting.
Yeah, and I did make an implication of that, I think, on your show of 2 weeks ago. But the thing that I'd just like to go along with you with the understanding that it's not intelligent for people to feel that local elections and the, as you stated, the midterm is not important. You see, without having civics in the schools, and we'll have to go to the South. You see, in the South, they didn't need civics years ago. All politics were local because you're talking about everything from the sheriff up, the people. But then when you come to the northern cities where everything was the boom, I don't want to say mechanization, but that was one of the things coming between the 20s and the 40s. So then when you have this understanding that you can go out and you can get a job, you don't have to work the land, you don't have to do hard labor, then you choose jobs because this is how you make your living. This is how your survival is dedicated. Wherein, if you came from a southern perspective, it would be that you had to work the land. You see, I think the misnomer is that we have been given this thing called work as a pacifier to replace slavery. Well, slavery was work. And then anyone that would choose, and this is just my opinion, anyone that would choose to work harder for less money, it's part of what the society has turned into. It's called productivity. So then with those things in mind, I would only say civics need to be put back into the schools. Because within the understanding of why you teach a child civics comes along with the understanding of why the economy has shaped itself the way that it has. Because of that same statement, not relating to voting, Gregory, but in relationship to survival. So then, yes, people don't go out and vote because it's a matter of survival. You can't take a day off. You can't be late. You can't. I mean, there's a certain phenomenon about not working for yourself or not having the understanding of working to get what you want for yourself. In the case of the Southerner, it was the land. It was a product. It was the crop. That crop had to be in. You had to plant it on time. You had to till the soil. So then in a northern perspective, it was get up and go to work. So that we have a conflict of interest between people who understand what it is to work for yourself, for your labor, to benefit, and those that have been given the right to draw a paycheck. And I'll leave it there because it's too complicated to get into. But civics need to be put back into the school, and all politics is local.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay.
And that was James calling in. I forgot to ask him where he's from, but I believe James is calling in from Harlem, if I'm correct. And if not, correct me next time, James, from Harlem. And a couple things I want to address that James mentioned. When he says politics is local, you know, that is definitely true. There's a lot that happens that impacts our life based on what our city council people do, what our mayors do, what our House of Representatives do, what our senators do, and what our governors do. So that is very true. And I definitely agree with that. And as folks know, I'm not into either or. So I believe in both. And so my wish and goal is that underdogs out there, you care about the local and care about the federal. Also, this idea of bringing civics into the school, you know, I always feel like there is a lack of what I'll call life skills taught in our public schools. And I believe one of those life skills is like how to be a citizen in the United States. So I get it, civics. And also another thing that I think is missing is financial literacy. And James mentioned something about work and about productivity and about it being at odds and like work harder to make less money and do more stuff. And I want there to be some financial literacy about compounding interest, about saving and investing, about what to do with a 401k if you're lucky enough to have one. I want folks to learn about interest rates and mortgages and real estate and the idea of that you can make your money work for you instead of you always having to work for your money. And to me, if there's anything that on this journey of fighting for underdogs to rediscover how special they are and some of the community programs that I have in the works and some of the people that I associate with, financial literacy along with civics are two things that are very important that I believe that as underdogs we get to have a better grasp of so that we can go from underdogs to champs. It's hard out here. And it's so hard out here to make money that folks would be willing to give up some of their rights just to get a 10% pay raise. And I get it. With that, let's continue on. I think I want to go down the path now of, you know, today's episode is called Unscripted. We're kind of just going where the energy flows and it takes us and just covering some thought stuff that's been on my mind this week. We've talked about MLK and, you know, really missing the fact that we lost a great American, one of the leaders of the civil rights movement. 50 years ago. And while there's progress that has been made, there's still more to be done. And I recently heard this clip of Dr. Martin Luther King, which I'll play in a second because I think it adds context, perspective. And I think it's often good that as underdogs, as we go out here every day to rediscover how special we are in the world, that it's good to have context. And I just want to play this clip before we get into some stuff about the kids and what we can learn from them and what they're up to in the world. Here's Dr. Martin Luther King talking about it was one thing to be free, but that freedom came with famine. It's one thing to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, but that's hard to do when we don't have boots.
What is it about the Negro? I mean, every other group that came as an immigrant somehow, not easily, but somehow got around it. Is it just the fact that Negroes are black?
White America must see that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. That is one thing that other immigrant groups haven't had to face. The other thing is that the color became a stigma. American society made the Negro's color a stigma. America freed the slaves in 1863 through the Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, but gave the slaves no land or nothing in reality, and as a matter of fact, to get started on. At the same time, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that there was a willingness to give the white peasants from Europe an economic base. And yet it refused to give its black peasants from Africa, who came here involuntarily in chains and had worked free for 244 years, any kind of economic base. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without food to eat or land to cultivate, and therefore it was freedom and famine at the same time. And when white Americans tell the Negro to lift himself by his own bootstraps, They don't look over the legacy of slavery and segregation. I believe we ought to do all we can and seek to lift ourselves by our own bootstraps. But it's a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And many Negroes, by the thousands and millions, have been left bootless as a result of all of these years of oppression and as a result of a society that deliberately made his color a stigma and something worthless and degrading.
It was only 50 years ago. It's only 50 years ago. Just some perspective from Dr. Martin Luther King. Like I said, two things that caught my attention in that brief but profound interview, it's this idea of, yeah, we were free, but there was freedom and famine at the same time. And yeah, it sounds good. Lace up your boots. Go out there and work hard. Work harder. Don't be so lazy. Lace up your boots. But it's hard to lace up boots when you don't have them. And so 50 years removed from the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, it's just good to put in perspective that some of the challenges that we have today, and in this case, I'm going to talk specifically about Black American underdogs, is that the foundation isn't the same that others have had in this country. And so the next time you go after somebody, or you just see the effect of where they are in life, just remember that maybe, just maybe, they didn't have any boots to lace up. And that might be the cause for their current situation. With that, shift gears. And I said we'd talk about the kids. Kids have been in the news lately. The young adults, the youth, out here showing up and showing out. There was the March for Our Lives. Whenever something like the tragic murder and killing execution of someone like Stephon Clark happened, the young folks, Black Lives Matter, a lot of those groups, the youth come out. There was some stuff that happened at Howard University. Again, adults acting up, and then the youth coming out, standing up for themselves. And the youth got everybody talking, got everybody in the mix. She's back.
And maybe it's just because we've lived through so many of these now, and finally the moment arrived, and these students were so willing to take on the challenge of speaking up and taking the NRA to task, that we finally had spokespeople that everybody could see and relate to.
I'm all for students fighting for school safety. I'm all for figuring out how we reduce gun violence. But I'm not all for Hillary Clinton. I'm ready for her to ride off into the sunset. But I do play her clip because she's back in the news again. But I play it only because she's talking about the youth and about them out there attempting to make things better. Out there dealing with grown folks' businesses. The grown folks haven't quite figured it out. Also, in youth movement news, some students at Howard University started occupying some buildings there after they found out of some misappropriation of some financial aid funds that were happening at their university. And so the students were like, we ain't standing for this. Y'all out here spending our money, being all fraudulent. And the students were like, we ain't having it. So we going to do some sit-ins. We going to protest. We going to be out here. And even using some Rihanna to do it. Shout out to the students of Howard University. Again, the youth showing up and showing out. After 9 days of occupying the campus administration building, Howard University students have ended their HU sit-in. This was after they reached a consensus with the trustees and university president. The trustees released a statement of commitments that addressed the students' concerns, and most were outlined in what was called the HU Resist. And even though the occupation is over, protesters feel like this is just the beginning of a much longer process to respect student power. The administration said they are going to make task forces co-chaired by students to address and review policies that relate to several things on campus. So while the misappropriations of funds are what sparked some of these protests, you had folks at Howard University, their staff or administrators taking money of hard-earned students and spending it and using it for themselves. The students weren't having it. But what I appreciate about the youth and about these students specifically is that they didn't just want things right about the misappropriation of funds. They use it as an opportunity to also say, we got some other things that need to get fixed around here. And some of those other things were this.
We demand that Howard University provide adequate housing for all students under the age of 21 and extend this fall 2018 deposit deadline to May 1st. Second demand, we demand an immediate end to unsubstantiated tuition hikes and complete access to administrative salaries. We demand that Howard University actively fight rape culture on campus in an effort to prevent sexual assault. We demand that Howard University implement a grievance system to hold faculty and administrators accountable in their language and actions towards students with marginalized identities. We demand that Howard University provide more counselors and implement an inclusive attendance policy that accounts for mental and emotional health issues. We demand the immediate disarming of all campus police officers and the formation of a police oversight committee controlled by students, faculty, staff, off-campus and off-campus community members. And we demand that Howard University allocate more resources towards combating food insecurity and gentrification within the LaJoie-Shaw community. We demand the immediate resignation of Wayne A.I. Frederick, President Wayne A.I. Frederick, and the 8 Executive Board of Trustee members. And finally, we demand that the students have the power to democratically influence the decisions of the administration and the Board of Trustees by way of popular vote.
Shout out to the students at Howard University. And shout out to Black Lives Matter out here continue to fight for ending police brutality, equality in the justice system, wanting those things to happen. Shout out to the youth that are part of the March for Our Lives movement that has been happening since what happened in Parkland. Shout out to those students at HU. I didn't go to a historically black university. I went to University of Pennsylvania, my hometown of Philly. But I did go to a Howard homecoming. And I do remember going to a basketball game there and looking out and seeing a sea of brothers and sisters and being like, this is fantastic. Good to see that they're out there making their demands. And in general, the youth are out here showing up and showing out. And I'm often reminded of the phrase that everyone we meet can be both a student and a teacher. And that the youth out here, oftentimes as adults, we are their teachers. But in a lot of the cases, they out here teaching us too. And to even bring it full circle, I think about the fact that someone like Martin Luther King died at the young age of 39, but early on, he was out there in his 20s. Other folks like the bus boycotts and some of the desegregation of schools, out there kids on the front lines of fighting for what was right. The youth have a history of helping us adults get some things better and right. And so I appreciate all the youth. With that, I'm going to try to get a couple quick phone calls in here before the break. And then we're going to finish with, speaking of the youth, I wanted to talk about, the fact that we get personal here about the news and the culture and talk about what are some things that as adults we can learn from kids. And there's 7 of them that I found in this recent article called 7 Lessons You Can Learn from Kids That Will Make You a More Successful Adult. I mean, I want to add an 8th, which is like the kids out here fighting for what's right, not just for them, but for America and for all of us. Whether it's at HU, whether it's Black Lives Matter, whether it's the March for Our Lives and on and on and on, or whether it was the youth from the Civil Rights Movement, the youth always out here showing up and showing out. Let me take this quick phone call before the break, and let's see if we can get one person on here. Name where you're calling from.
Hey, Randy Jones from the Bronx, New York.
Okay, so Randy, first, I need your quick comment, and then I'm going to go to Barry because I'm coming up with a break. Randy, make your comment.
Okay, my comment is this. Nothing seemed to change. 50 years ago, what we went through when Dr. King was around, it seems like it's still a continuation. You got police brutality, you got cops shooting, killing innocent blacks and stuff like that. You still got racial tension. in America, you know, and I'm like, the youth is marching, that's good, but do they really understand what the march was with Dr. King marched for? Do they really know, or are they just doing it just to be a part of something, okay? Have they really been educated? Have they yielded themselves to the education of what they've been taught in schools, if they have been taught in schools, and so they can go out and make themselves a better person,
hey,
okay?
I appreciate your comment, and I will address that in a second. Thanks for calling in, Randy.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, now, Barry. Oh. Barry, talk to me.
Okay, well, basically, in a nutshell, is basically, like James had mentioned something about civics.
Yep.
Okay, and he mentioned that it might have been a little too difficult to go into that at the time. But, see, that was the problem. When Randy just mentioned about the youth having the energy, but they probably don't know why they're, you know, marching and, you know, what King's March was about. And that's part of the dumbed down, I think James was alluding to, because when it comes to the civics, along with the civics comes the ethics also. And when you have those that's working for themselves versus those that's just working for a paycheck, working for somebody else, there's a different ethic attitude about a lot of stuff. And so I think it goes back into, you know, your initial question of, what would people substitute for voting
for a pay
raise? $5,000. Yeah. When you look at $5,000, how much is that per week, per paycheck? And see, and that's where the ethics I'm thinking about, you know, when it comes to Dr. King, and what James was mentioning about civics and stuff like that. And the youth, when, okay, they may not have the full, you know, information about any and everything, but this is the energy where it comes to inform them. Because there was time, I was on a train, there were the young people coming on the train, and they were sneaking on the train. And it was on Martin Luther King's Day. And he was writing them up. And I said, I just calmly said, this is Martin Luther King's birthday, man. He said, you know what he said?
What?
He said, Martin Luther King never did nothing for me.
Whoa.
And I was stunned. I read back. I thought he was kidding. I said, he did nothing? He said, he did nothing for me. And finished writing the ticket. And so he could have been, I think he was about in his 20s, like this here. And so there's a different ethic attitude about a lot of stuff. So if people was informed, if people heard that tape that you just played just now, mm-hmm. that was a powerful piece. People hearing the dream and this, that, and the other. But that was the powerful centerpiece, you know, a piece where he was really the bottom line of all his speeches. No matter which one, you can go from this one to that one. The basic bulk, the belly of all his speeches was that one right there.
Yeah, and I think the one thing I want people to also take away from this, and I think you're alluding to it, and so did James also, is that I think sometimes we're quick to go, and not you, but sometimes we'll attack people like, I can't believe that kid, that dude said that to you, that he didn't do anything for me. But I think the question we often need to ask people is why, right? So it's not that people don't have the talent or the aptitude to know stuff. Sometimes they just haven't been exposed. They haven't had things put in the proper context.
Right.
And
yeah.
So and the reason why I played that Martin Luther King clip is that sometimes we talk about these people are lazy or they're on the block or they need to do better. And it's like, well, it's hard to lace up your bootstraps when you don't have no boots.
Right. And it's hard to understand the struggle of a person if you really don't have the information. Yeah. So it's the same principle. And that's where, you know, that's where I'm basically coming from, you know. It's being spiritually without spiritual boots,
yep.
without informational boots, you know,
yes.
things of that nature. And so this incomplete information, I think, is what we're really grappling with. And I'm so thankful for your show like yours and others, you know, because we don't really have all that much, you know, as far as really plugging in and reaching out and addressing some stuff, you know, spontaneously, you know, impromptu about, you know, things that happens. You know, in the broad scope, in the mass media, you know, like this here. But it's these small little outlets like this here that, you know, it's to me, it's really a blessing.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. And that's what we do here, right? We don't just cover and commentate about it. We get personal about it and hopefully provide some perspective for folks and a voice, too.
Right. All right, my brother. Solid gold, man. On the rebound.
All right, appreciate you. And that was Barry. And then also before Barry, that was James. And that was Randy and all the folks calling in. And she didn't make it on air today, but also shout out to Deborah, who I got to talk to during one of the breaks. Man, 2 hours is gone just like that. I can't believe it. I'm just grateful that so many of you underdogs go on the journey with me, both online and on the phone lines. Let me at least acknowledge a couple folks online. Danny says, great job. And I appreciate you, Danny, for checking in. And also, Danny, thanks for the comment about, I believe you said earlier in the show that one of your pastors used to despise Martin Luther King. And then now, years later, he actually appreciates him. And that's true of America. According to a Gallup poll back in the 1960s, 2/3 of Americans had a negative rating of Martin Luther King in the 60s. Negative rating. 2/3 hated him. And obviously history would be on his side because he was fighting for what was just and what was right. But I bring that up also to say to those underdogs out there who are fighting the struggle that they may be despised right now too, but to keep on going. History will get it right. But also I want to acknowledge you right now for what you're doing right now. Also, shout out to Artie Green who says, what's good, my brother? And I say, what's good to you, Artie? Appreciate you stopping on through. Shout out to Artie and all he does with the Classic Fam playlist. And so that is always a very good thing. And then also I see Danielle with a big smiley face. So I smile right back at you. Thank you to everybody who joins in on the Facebook Live because, you know, it's 2018. We got a lot of technology out here. So folks get to let their fingers do the talking. And shout out to all the folks who join in the old school way. Sometimes we just get to talk to one another. Mr. Telephone Man, there's nothing wrong with your line. If you dial 212-650-6903, I'm going to pick up every time. With that, it is time for the big close to the show. I didn't get to the article that I wanted to talk about. 7 lessons you can learn from kids that will make you a more successful adult. I'm going to read a couple of them off just because I got a few minutes. And then we'll deep dive into them next week. 7 things we can learn as adults. We also learned that the kids can be out here with all their energy helping us grown folks make things right. Those students at Howard University, the youth with Black Lives Matter, the youth with March for Our Lives, and on and on and on. But 7 things we can learn from kids that are helping us as adults. One is it's okay to ask for help because kids are like, yo, I need some help. As adults, there's this saying that we all need more support than we're getting. Find that youth inside of you that used to be all for asking for partnership and support and help. 2, allowing yourself to be vulnerable will help you make friends. That's a good one. Vulnerability is always a good thing. And I love that we do that here every week where we get to lean in and share more about ourselves and not be so alone in the world. 3, it's important to acknowledge your emotions. Remember when you were a kid, if you were feeling like a tantrum, you threw one. If you were feeling like smiling, you smiled. If you felt like belting out an inappropriate statement about something, you did it. Now, don't be reckless as an adult, but tap into acknowledging your emotions. Also, you don't know everything. Curiosity strengthens personal relationships. It's good to be curious. Ask a lot of questions. Remember when you used to just be like, why is the sky blue? Why is that doing that thing like that? Who is that? You just ask a lot of questions because you didn't know everything. And one of my favorites is you can try new experiences before you are fully prepared. I remember getting on a bike not knowing if I could ride a bike. What's something that you're not quite sure you know how to do, but you would really love to give it a try anyway? Do it! And there's a few more, but we'll get to those next week. It's time for the big finish to the show. Shout out to all the underdogs and my people who came along on the journey today. I appreciate you. To all the callers, to all the comments online, to all the people riding around in their car on this sunny Sunday in Harlem and New York City. Also, thank you to all the folks who listen to the podcast every week. We're trending in the top 100 in society and culture out of thousands of podcasts on Podomatic, and that's because you've been downloaded on Apple Podcast, Google Play, Stitcher, Podomatic, and Spotify too. Appreciate you. And if you haven't, search the Gregory Neesman Show. It'll pop up and then you can follow it, listen to it, subscribe to it. New episodes out every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Also, shout out to the team. I don't just show up here and start talking. I wish it was that easy, but there's people who help me do the show every week. And shout out to Megan, my producer, and shout out to Kayla, my editor. And as always, if you've ever listened to the show before, I think you know how I'm going to end the show. Because I do it every show. Like, there's my favorite quote, and hopefully yours too. And that favorite quote is, and get ready to say it along with me. On 3 here. 1, 2, on 3 here. underdogs. Can't nobody do it, and I mean nobody. Can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace.